ね、まあでも This question is directed to the differences of the Ulama-i-Kiram. The question is that on account of the differences of the Ulama, the public are suffering greatly. So that answers this question. This was the theme of the life of the Sahaba Kiram, that they were very, very staunch and very firm upon the Kitabullah, very firm upon the Sunnah. The slightest deviation was intolerable. That Umar radiallahu anhu in the time of Hazrat Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu, when there was a group who had refused to pay zakat, so Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu was very much disturbed and he declared war against such people. And Umar radiallahu anhu felt that Abu Bakr should have a softer stance. He shouldn't have such a hard stance. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu replied that if these people refuse to give a kid, a small of a goat, I will wage jihad against them. And if they refuse to give a small string that they used to give in zakat in the time of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then I'll wage jihad against them. And then he struck him on the chest and he told him that in the days of Jahiliyat, ignorance, you were so stern and you were so staunch. Now in the time of Islam, you become coward. So this staunchness and this firmness, nothing new. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, he says that if anybody wishes to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as a Muslim, then he should follow the path of the Sahaba ikram. He should follow the path of the people of the past. And amongst the ways, amongst the sunnats of the people of the past, is to perform the namaz with jamaat. And then he goes on to say, and if you leave this path, in other words, this path of performing namaz with jamaat, then you will go astray, you will get into kufr. Imagine, leaving out namaz is considered as equivalent to disbelief. You leave out namaz with jamaat, this is likened to disbelief. There's numerous hadiths that say the same message. One who leaves out namaz, then he is a kafir. Right? Though later on there was the differences of the Ulama-i-Kiram on account of the differences of the Sahaba-i-Kiram, and if there weren't these differences of the Sahaba-i-Kiram, then the person that wasn't performing namaz, he would have been in serious problems, because the Sahaba-i-Kiram, if they had consensus on anything, if they had consensus on any issue, then the latter generations would have been compelled to follow that consensus. They would have then declared such people as kafirs. So really, their differences turn out to be a blessing for the ummah. Now, there's so many people, you can say at least 90% of the people, who aren't particular about the namaz. You don't see the jamaat making gush and all that. And what amount of people respond to them? What amount of people aren't particular about the namaz? So you can imagine what would have been the fate of these people that had left out namaz. They wouldn't have been Islam in the first place. So these differences really prove as a blessing for the ummah. Then you find hadith of similar message in the time of Umar or Ali radiallahu anhu. There was a complaint that a certain group of people had drunk wine. So Umar radiallahu anhu had summoned them. They were sent up to Medina Munawwara and he consulted the senior Sahaba ikram as to what to do. these people have drunken wine, what should we do with them? Should we kill them? What should we do? Some suggested that they should be killed. Ali radiallahu anhu was silent. Umar radiallahu anhu referred to Ali radiallahu anhu as to what should be done to these people that have drunken wine. So Ali radiallahu anhu replied that if these people had drunken wine, considering it to be halal and permissible, then kill them, because then they are kafirs. But if they felt that it was haram, they believed that it was haram, and they drank it thinking that it is haram, then they should be flogged, they should be whipped 80 lashes and freed. So you see these differences, really, they turn out to be a blessing. They are not a punishment, they are not causing more confusion in the ranks of the ummah. Otherwise, if there is no differences, and then these differences are natural, people of different temperaments, different ways, different thinking, then they must have this type of differences, they will think in a different way. In fact, yesterday that article that was read, that where there is a difference, then it's indicative of truth. Otherwise, everybody connived on one thing, there was no difference of opinion at all, then that was suspect. Don't you see lawyers, people of law, and it's one issue, one is looking at it differently, the other is looking at it differently. Medication, one doctor is looking at the same problem differently, and the next doctor is looking at it differently. So that is perfection, that is kamal. That each person is coming out, he's employing his mind to the best of his ability, and he's coming out with something better. The other one is trying also to the best of his ability to bring about a solution to that problem. He's using his discretion. Now, if they weren't using their discretion, they weren't employing the mental capacities to bring about a solution, and they were just following blindly, then there would have been any difference. But then that would have not been a solution for the ummah. The solution is that each person uses his mind to the best of his ability, try to bring about a solution for the problem. Then he goes on to explain that these differences, one of the reasons for this difference is the background of the people that are on the field. You see, there are people that are working, ulama or whoever else is working. He gives an example. The sword will be as strong as the metal it was made of, right? The clay pot will be as strong as the clay that it was made of. So similarly, now you get ulama, you get people that are giving guidance, they're dispensing hidayat, etc. Then they're coming from a certain background. So the background that they are coming from will definitely impact on their ways, their thinking, their service, etc. There must be some reason why Rasulullah had said, Al-Immatu min Quraysh, that the amirs and imams must be appointed from the Quraysh. So people coming from a certain background, they have a different attitude, they have a different approach, they have a different way of working, mannerism of working. Everybody won't work in the same way. One person is more responsible, one is lesser responsible, one is doing it with complete spirit, one is doing it with half spirit. That you find it here when they're having the istimas, Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. And some people, you can make out from their attitude, you can make out that some people are more dedicated and more committed, and some people are relaxed. Now they need external assistance to come and make that istima a success. Now they are naturally, some people are naturally very relaxed. They are not that worried and concerned. And the other group is very concerned. Now we need to make the day and the night equal, and put the shoulder to the wheel, and work this and see that it becomes a success. So one person works with full steam, the other person works with half steam, the other person works with quarter steam. So this must happen. It's not possible that you don't have this type of differences in the temperament, right? Then he says that, alright, this is one thing. And the hadith also says that khiyarukum, the best of you is the best that, you know, the best amongst you will be that group of people that were best in the days of ignorance. After you have accepted Islam, now who will be considered as the best? The best that were the best in the days of ignorance, now after accepting Islam, they will be considered and counted as the best. Because that's the best stock of community. That's the best stock of community they have accepted Islam. Right? They were noble, they were intelligent, and they were productive, and they used their minds when they worked. Right? Now they've accepted Islam, so that same energy, the same potential that they used in the days of ignorance, now they will use it for this, for the cause of Islam. You see a person like Khalid ibn Walid radiallahu anhu, and he is leading the enemy forces against Islam. He is leading. Now he accepts Islam, the same Khalid ibn Walid radiallahu anhu, now is leading the Muslim forces against the Kufar. So that will be counted as the best. Such a thing will be counted as the best. In the days of ignorance, who was counted as the best? Now we've accepted Islam. Such a person will be counted as the best person. So these are natural inhibitions, natural temperaments, natural temperaments. The natural temperaments don't die. If you accept Islam, the same natural temperament will be in a different cause. It will be used again, and it's used in a different cause. Person is a miser, for example, he's big-hearted, right? He's big-hearted and he spends freely, but he isn't on the cause. Now that he's on the cause, he's righteous, he's changed his life. When he's changed his life, now he's being big-hearted will not be stopped. He won't stop that. He will still spend, but now the cause will change. Before he used to spend, but he should be spending in the wrong causes. Now that he's accepted Islam, he'll be still spending, but he'll be spending in the right causes. So this will not change. It's a thing of temperament. So if you got that temperament of ulama-i-kiram, then they will also conduct themselves in that way. Now what's going on is, like the hadith says, that the leader of the community will be the most despicable, right? The leader of a community will be most despicable. It is also partly the fault of the community at large that anybody and everybody are chosen to become ulama. Right? Anybody and everybody are chosen to become ulama. We don't see what is the background, what is the mental capacity, how does he reason, how does he behave. We don't see all these things here. And we just pick him up and we are sending him to become an alim. Obviously, the past that he's coming from, that doesn't leave him. He hasn't left him. You know, when I say a thing of temperament, I just mentioned that incident early on. In the time of Alamgir Rahmatullah Ali, three people were apprehended for the same crime. So Alamgir Rahmatullah Ali just stared at the one person, the second person he reprimanded him, and the third person he beat him up. So those advisors that were there, they said, but this is not fair, they were caught for the same crime, and the punishment was meted differently. Why is it? So Alamgir Rahmatullah Ali says, he's the king, he's the ruler. So he says, it's sorrowful that you people, or it's a pity that you people don't see what I see. It's a pity that you don't see as I see. Go and see these three people that have been punished. And then seeing the first person that the king just stared at him, he had already passed out, he already died. The king had stared at me. So he couldn't withstand it, it was too much for him. And the second person, he became very seriously ill, there were doctors and physicians attending to him. The king had reprimanded me. And the third person, he is back into the same crime, into the same game, and says, no, I got hiding now. I'll be apprehended again, I'll get hiding again. So there are people of different temperaments. One person takes a thing very lightly, another person takes it very seriously. Don't you see on the street, right, there'll be a class of people that are flirting with women. They don't think anything about it. They'll be flirting with women, they'll be talking very freely, they don't think much about it, right? That class of people you'll find that they are flirting with women, their photos are being taken with women, etc. They don't think anything about it. Those women don't think anything about it, those men don't think anything about it. Right? Then you'll find a class of people who's openly indulging in wine, and then they advertising wine, they're not worried about it, right? So they don't have that level of shame, they don't have that level of respect, and they don't have that moral in them, right? Now if these people accept Islam, obviously after accepting Islam, that shameless behavior of theirs will be still continuing, or that it will be reduced, but you cannot say that it will be eliminated from their temperament. They were living all their lives in that way. Now they've accepted Islam, they're not going to totally take a U-turn. that previous temperament is going to impact upon them. They won't have that level of shame, of that level of modesty, that level of respect, as a person who's coming from a respectable family. A respectable family, now he doesn't want anything of that. He doesn't want to be seen at a bar, right? And the next person feels, what's wrong with going into a bar? I can go there, I can just have a soda water and go out. He doesn't think much about it. But this person thinks, hey, if I'm going to go there, and how will I be viewed? What will people think of me? So he'll think 10 times. This person thinks differently, that person thinks differently. Both you are sending them to a madrasa, person that is coming from this type of a environment, you are sending him, and person is coming from a next environment, both are being sent to the same institute without examining what type of stock they are. So when you don't examine the stock they are coming from, and then you send them to one institute, obviously the product will be different, they will be behaving in a different way. One person you will find that he goes to the highest bidder, right? He's an alim, but now he's looking for the highest bidder, right? Stanga Sharif, how much they offering? 5,000. All right, no, this all right. But this will, how much they offering? 10,000. I'll go this idea. Okay? So you're looking for the highest bidder. You're not looking for service. So he's looking at it as a business thing, as a business venture. He's not looking at it as a service for deen. I need to provide a service for deen. Both are looking at it different. Both have qualified. Both paths are the same. Right? Now one is looking totally in a perspective of business, as a financial thing. And the other person is looking at it as service. All right, where am I more required? And where can I serve the community better? Am I more conducive and more compatible with these people? I can work better here or there. He's looking at it differently. And that person looks at it differently. So, because of the difference of the temperaments, you must have this difference. But then, as he says, it's our problem. When we see the child has got a good potential, he's capable, right? He's capable. Then we want to make him a professional person, a lawyer, doctor, engineer, whatever you want to send him for. But when we see that that person is not capable or worthy of anything, then say, well, never mind, we give him for the name of Allah Ta'ala. In the name of Allah Ta'ala, we sacrifice the person. So that's our position. It's to some extent, it's our problem. We're not worthy of anything, put it on with us, at least we'll get sawab for that. This is our mentality. So what product are you going to get? You'll get that type of product afterwards. Say, in Makkah Sharif, in the old days, they didn't have this municipal water, you see. So people used to draw water from the well. Now you're going to the well, and sometimes the well doesn't have a barrier, doesn't have a wall around it. So in the process of pulling out the water, someone slips. It's a slip to the outside, so you slip into the wall, into the well. Now they got someone to come and pull you out. So as the person pulls the drowning person out and he's alive, so his family will give 10 kurush or 20 riyal or 50 riyal as a bakshish, you see. He pulled him and pulled him out alive. But now he pulled the person out, by the time he pulled him out, he's already dead. Now there's nobody to give any bakshish. So, ye to khuda ka naam. This is for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. I'm doing it for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. So that's our attitude. That's how we are behaving. This is how we will appoint someone to go and learn and further his studies, etc. We're not looking at the behavior, temperament, ways, mannerisms, the level of morality, level of respect and honor, dignity. We don't look at these things. Just, you know, get sawab listening to the madrasa, make him a hafiz, make him an alim. So this is partly or largely the problem of the community at large, that they are sending these type of people. If they send respectable people, people with honor, dignity, shame, modesty, and they send them to the madrasa, their behavior will be totally different. I remember I was in Johannesburg once, and it was a tailor, a friend, maybe it's about 25 years ago, tailor, and he had Malawian staff. So they were preparing some kurtas and all that. And I see one of the staff is getting up. He went out, he coughed, and he cleaned his nose, and he came back, and he's on the machine again. So I asked the boss, why is he like this? You know, he feels it disrespectful to cough and to clean his nose in the presence of the boss. Now you see, the one person looks at it so much of respect, he's so thorough, he's so refined. Another feels nothing about it. Other person will feel nothing about it. Even if he wants to break wind for, he won't feel anything about it. One person feels so embarrassed, you know, he feels so embarrassed, so particular about it, Another person feels nothing about it. So these are temperaments and the background that you come from. So that background does that background and the temperament doesn't get eliminated and wiped out, doesn't get washed out. It must affect, it must show at some point or the other. Your behavior, your ways, your mannerisms, how you will talk, how you will conduct yourself, what you will do, what you won't do. So all these things, it will show out later on in life. Like you see the cases of, people going to the CCMA now. One person doesn't mind, let me go to the CCMA. No problem, he doesn't feel anything. The other person says, no, I'd rather not have any money, I don't go to the CCMA, I don't do it. Because he's looking at it differently. One is looking at it differently, the other is looking at it differently. He says, no, it was my legal right, and I have got the right to fight. The other person feels, no, this will become a thing of publicity, it will bring disgrace, people will begin to talk for and against, rather I don't go this way. So, you see the temperament and the background that you are coming from, mentality, how you think, and how the environment influences your mind. Environment also influences you, people, peer pressure, etc., they influence your mind. So, all these things have to be seen before we come to any conclusion, why are these differences in our community? Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today inshallah we'll discuss certain masail regarding business dealings and other dealings. First of all, the importance of halal. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran Majid, Ya ayyuha ar-rusulu kulu min at-tayyibati wa amalu saliha, which means that all prophets eat of halal and do good actions. The ulama explained that there is a link and connection between what a person eats and the type of actions that a person will do. Similarly, the cornerstone of Islamic dealings, whether it is business dealings or any dealings, is on transparency, it's on truth, on honesty. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has mentioned in hadith, At-tajiru as-saduqu al-ameen ma'a an-nabiyyin wa as-siddiqeen, or kama qala sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. That businessman who is truthful and he is honest and trustworthy, then on the day of Qiyamah he will be with the anbiya and the siddiqeen. So a few masail we'll discuss, or a few aspects wherein we find that there is discrepancies. One important masala regarding business is that it is not permissible to sell an immovable item until and unless a person has taken possession of it. If someone has purchased an immovable item, then it is not permissible for him to on-sell that item until he has taken possession of that item. For example, someone buys a consignment of sugar or whatever it is, then before taking possession of that, it is not permissible for him to sell that to a third person. And if a person does so, then that sale is corrupt, is incorrect, is impermissible. Yes, if that thing that is purchased is immovable, for example, a house, a property, etc., then this can be sold before taking possession. The same must will apply even to renting. A person cannot rent something. If a person has purchased something, then before taking possession of that, if it's a movable item, then it is not permissible for him to rent it before taking possession of it. Another masala people normally have confused regarding business dealings is that it is correct for a person to have a different cash price and a different credit price. For example, if a person is selling, let's say if a person is selling a shoe for 100 rand, this is his cash price, it will be permissible for him, for example, if someone is interested in purchasing that shoe, but on credit, it will be permissible for him to sell it at a higher price, maybe 150 rand, and the purchaser will pay after 3 months. But the condition is that when the sale is concluded, it must be specified and fixed, whether the person has bought it as a cash deal or a credit deal. It will be incorrect and impermissible, for example, to conclude the deal in this manner, that you tell the person who is buying the item, that if you pay now or if you pay within 7 days, then it is 100 rand. If you pay after 1 month, it's 110 rand, and so forth, so on. Because now, this is not fixed. But if the price is fixed, then it will be permissible to have a different credit price and a different cash price. Then also, in a sale, it is incorrect to add restrictive clauses and conditions. There are certain conditions that can be added in a sale. For further details, if a person requires to know, then you can contact some experienced alim. But there are certain conditions that cannot be made in a sale. For example, it is common nowadays, if I'm interested in buying a supermarket from someone, then I will buy the supermarket with the condition that the seller will not open up a similar business in within so many kilometers radius from my business. So these kind of conditions are incorrect in a sale. Then, with regards to investments or partnerships, many times you find people, they form a partnership, and the condition is made that one of the partners make a condition that he wants a fixed return. For example, the condition is, agreement is made that at the end of the year, an X amount will be for a certain partner. So this is incorrect. Similarly, sometimes the return is fixed on the capital. For example, a person invests a certain amount of money, and the agreement is made that I will get 20% of my capital. So this is also incorrect. The correct way of a partnership is that all the partners share in the profit that will be made by the partnership. Then, with regards to all the partners, the correct method of partnership is that all the partners will share in the profit and in loss. And then, with regards to leasing, with regards to hiring someone, a common mistake is made, is quite common, is that certain services are taken from a person, but the fee is not fixed beforehand. For example, a person calls a plumber, or a person takes his kurta to he wants a tailor, someone to sew a kurta for him. So the person does the work, a piece of work, but the price is not fixed from before. So this is incorrect, and the fee should be determined from before. If the situation is such that the person, he says that he can't decide what is the fee now because he doesn't know how much work is involved in it. So then the person could tell that person that he fixes a higher price, or he's conservative in the price that he gives, and that after he can give a discount if need be. Or a person can fix an hourly rate. He can say, look, okay, per hour that I put in this work, this will be my charge. Also, regarding hiring and leasing, when subletting something, it is not permissible to sublet at a higher rental than your head lease. If someone has hired something at a certain rental, then it will be impermissible for him to sublet that at a higher rental than what he is paying. Yes, there are two situations where it will be permissible, and those two situations are, if the person who has hired that item or that property, etc., if he has made some addition, for example, he's put in some partitioning or etc., he's made some addition in that whatever he has hired, then it will be permissible for him to charge a higher rental to the in his sublease. And the second situation where it will be permissible is where the currency of the head lease is different, or the fee of the head lease is different to the currency and the fee of the sublease. For example, person has hired something in dollars. For example, the rental he's paying is $100. So now when he hires out that, when he sublets it, he can charge whatever he wants if he's in a different currency, rands, etc. Then, with regards to, this is not regarding business, but regarding giving gifts, a common mistake is made that something which is divisible, something which can be divided. If a person is giving that item, if it's a divisible item, a person is giving it to more than one person. Say, for example, it is sweets or chocolates, etc. So a person is interested in giving it, or a slab of chocolate, more than one person, then the masla is that he should divide that whatever he is giving and then give it. It is incorrect to give that item to both people. If this is provided, that item can be divided. When he said that the item is divisible, means that after dividing it, then benefit can be taken from it. For example, a car cannot be divided and shared between two people. But anything else which is divisible, then it has to first be divided and thereafter given as a gift. Also, regarding giving of gifts, a gift is incomplete until and unless the person who has been given the gift, he takes possession of that gift. You find many times parents give their baligh children, or they give something to their baligh children, but possession is not made of that. So that still belongs to the person who has given it. It has not, the ownership hasn't changed from one person to the other.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. From this one verse of the Quran, لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم. So don't eat your wealth amongst yourselves unjustly. Then the Quran Sharif says that if it is trade, any type of business basically two types. One is wealth for some commodity, and number two is wealth for some type of service. So this is basically business revolves around one of these two elements: wealth for commodity and wealth for service. Right. So the Quran Sharif says that don't eat your wealth unjustly. إِلَّا أَن تَكُونَ تِجَارَةً أَن تَرَادٍ. The business, whatever the nature of the business, must be done with consent. I'm selling it, and my consent is taken. I'm happy about the whole business deal. So this is the basic shart, the basic condition for the validity of the sale. So if I was under duress, I was pushed into selling something, so that business dealing will not be absolutely pure. It will have some type of contamination and some type of filth in it, because it was done out of duress, it was forced, the person was forced to sell it. Then the second thing that we need to understand is the two principles that we need to understand in business. One is that the thing that is being exchanged, it must be wealth, right? Wealth for wealth, like rice for money. So there are two commodities that will make the sale valid. But if it is wealth and on the other side it's not wealth, then this is not a sale. Like when you charge a person interest, right? You have lent him 100 rands in exchange of 120 rands. So that additional 20 rands was not in exchange of any wealth, rather it was because of the payment being deferred. So wealth, additional wealth in exchange of time. Can you see that? It's additional wealth. 20 rands you took for what? In exchange of time. And time is not property, it's not a wealth. You can't sell time. It's not a commodity that you can purchase or sell. So this will be considered as totally invalid, totally baseless, right? Then the other type of sale will be that which is wrong, but it won't be totally baseless. Now that type of sale is where there is some type of a corruption that has entered into the sale. There is a commodity that is being sold and bought, but an external wrong has come and joined in. For example, now I'm selling you a shirt, right? Or a garment I'm selling to you. So you ask me, what is the price? And I say, no, take it now. We'll fix the price later. Now this can eventually lead to a dispute. It could eventually lead to a dispute. So those factors that can lead to disputes eventually, that will also render the sale as wrong. Not totally baseless, but it's wrong. So yeah, that wealth that you've earned is not totally halal. A degree of contamination has entered the wealth. Why? Because of this element that when the sale is being concluded, there must be no ambiguity, let there be total transparency. Yeah, you say, I take it and we'll see about the price later on. You didn't fix the price. So these are the two type of corruptions that enter into the sale. One is where that sale, that business or that transaction is not a transaction in the first place, totally baseless. And the second is where it is a valid transaction, but a degree of corruption has entered into the sale, like I just explained now. Right? That's the second thing. The third thing is this, that there are great virtues for the person that is honest, he's trustworthy, he's truthful in his business, upright. Then ma'an nabiyyina wa siddiqina wa shuhada, he will be resurrected with the anbiya, he will be resurrected with the awliya, nabi siddiqin, the great awliya, and with the martyrs, right? One hadith, it is reported that the best wealth is the wealth of a businessman. The best wealth is the wealth of a businessman, but he needs to have approximately six conditions. One is that he is truthful. In his transaction, he is truthful, right? He doesn't say the person, you know what, I'm selling you this. I'm not making a profit. It's below my cost. It's below my cost, I'm selling you. So he's truthful in his business. He's not speaking a lie in that business, right? So number one, he's truthful. Number two, he's honest. Right? If the client, for example, the customer has made a certain agreement, right? He made an agreement that this will be payable over, say, 6 months. So then he's honest, he's committed to that agreement, he doesn't become dishonest afterwards. Right? Or he's selling a product, for example, when he's selling the product, if it's a car that was damaged and fixed up, so he tells the customer in advance, that, see, this is a dented, it was a dented car, it was fixed up later on. It was a car that was built, rebuilt, right? So he makes it known to the customer that this is a rebuilt motor car. It isn't like you see it, right? So he makes it known. He doesn't leave anything ambiguous. Number three is he doesn't deceive and he doesn't cheat, right? You got an item, you don't cheat the customer, you don't mislead the customer in hiding anything that is in that, anything, any defect, you don't hide it. You make it known to the person that there's a defect. Or, alternatively, you could tell the customer that you buy it as it is. I'm not responsible for any of the damages that are in the car. Right? I don't know what motor cars I'm selling it to you, and I'm selling it to you as it is. And I know of some mistakes, so some faults in the car, and some faults I don't know about. But you take it as it is, I'm not responsible in future. So you made it known to the customer that you're not responsible for any of the faults or the wrongs that are in the car. Number four is that when you're selling an item, then you don't overpraise your commodity, the merchandise, you don't praise it too much. This can't get it anywhere, one of its kind. You're lucky to get this, man. You know, you won't get it anywhere, you won't get this. So you don't overpraise the commodity. Number five, when you're purchasing someone, the businessman is purchasing someone, some commodity, so he doesn't now unnecessarily find faults in that commodity. One is to praise your product, and one is to run down the next person's product when you are purchasing. Right? So you don't do that. Number six is this, that when you have to make a payment, then you are prompt in making the payment. You don't delay and you don't defer the payment. You agreed upon it, and when that payment, when it's due, then you don't defer it, you pay it promptly, you pay it on time. Number six. And number seven is this, that when you have to make a demand, right, when you have to make a demand, then you are lenient in your approach. Then you don't constrain the person and make it difficult for him and harass him and chase him for that money. Then you are lenient. You see the person, you see his condition, his halat, and then you make the demand accordingly. So the hadith is reported that this person who trades in this way with these seven conditions, then his wealth is the best. So when the wealth is best, then the product that will come from the best wealth will also be best. But if we aren't doing all this, you know, we're missing out one of these seven conditions that the hadith speaks about, then the products also will come out similarly. You will make the money, but it will then be misused. The money will be misused. Allah give us tawfiq.